year ago, we celebrated a 95th birthday in this room. And today, Mrs. Royal Thompson, Juanita, is back having celebrated her 96th. We said we would have another formal celebration on the 100th, but we wish you many happy returns of the day, Mrs. Thompson. We're also pleased to have a young couple in the audience who will be married in this church just a day or so before Christmas, Jennifer and Thatch. Jennifer is a granddaughter in the Ivan West family, and members of that family are present. They have told me that they plan to have their wedding whether or not the pipe organ is here by that time. Once upon a time, a generation ago, there was a woman in St. Louis, Missouri, with a keen sense of humor, a close and loving family, and a sentence upon her head of imminent death. She had battled cancer for 2 years. Until now, in the late autumn of her last year of life, she knew, everybody knew, that only days were left. At her request, everybody came for Thanksgiving dinner. And that evening, filled with affection for all of them and not wanting to be forgotten, she asked a favor. She said, "We've always been honest in this family. I'm going to be honest with you. This will be our last time together, and I'd like to be remembered. So once in a while, whenever you choose, at a gathering like this, with the flowers and the candles and the children around the table, I'd like you to pause for just a second and say, this moment of happiness is in memory of Margaret. And you can drink a toast, and if there are fusses in the family, heal them. And if it's Thanksgiving again, like this, you can pretend if you want to that the pumpkin's smile is my smile. Do it any way you like. It just comforts me to think that there will be some times when you will remember." Her family has honored that request, although they will admit that 35 years later, it's not quite as spontaneous as it was early on, that they have to talk about it and explain it to the children who did not know Margaret. They try to tell the children about the music in her voice and how wisely and generously she loved people. And having recreated the past, the little ceremony seems to work. Except that one day, Margaret's daughter tells me, she heard one of the grandchildren say to a friend she had brought, "By the way, we do this thing tonight at the table. I think it's kind of a nuisance, to tell you the truth, and I'm not even sure what I'm supposed to get out of it, but I thought I'd warn you in advance." And the daughter realized that what had begun as a close personal moment of loving recollection had turned into a ritual, which sometimes worked and sometimes didn't, and had to be explained now instead of gladly experienced. And although it did seem to have power at one time to heal family quarrels and reconcile those who were estranged, now it often failed to work. I'm sure there isn't anyone in this room with even the least knowledge of Christian history who hasn't recognized the analogy I have just presented. What Margaret asked of her family has something in common with what Jesus of Nazareth asked of his family on the last night of his life. One great difference, of course, is that the family of Jesus has grown until it stretches all around the world. Some of the children, having a little symbolic meal in his honor every week, others once a month, still others once or twice a year, and even a few of them, who love him just as much, deciding that they can remember without any sort of physical object to jog their memory, so that when they do it, these Quaker cousins, they do it in spirit, without a cup or a loaf of bread, in a silent communion. However it's done, it will be done this morning by hundreds of millions of people around the world, because this is Worldwide Communion Sunday. And the simple fact that so many people are doing the same thing on the same day is extraordinary. Although the fact that I have already tried to set the stage and explain the ceremony means that we have come a long, long way from that small band of disciples who, in respect for the wishes of Christ, got it all started. If it would help make this event mean something more than just a notation on the calendar or a change in our usual format in this church, here is one way you might do it. It happens to be a way I often use, but I think it can work for anyone who chooses to try. You sit there in the pew and think of some church you visited once on a vacation or a business trip. Whether a grand church or a small church doesn't matter. Anything from St. John's in Manhattan or Salisbury Cathedral to the little chapel in Green Mountain Falls, Colorado, or the one that sits at the foot of the Sawtooth Range in Stanley, Idaho. Any place where you have worshiped. You imagine those people sitting there this morning, all doing the same thing we are doing. The music may be very different, the sermon not at all the same, but one ritual, pretty much like the one we will have here, what we Protestants call communion or the Lord's Supper. Think about the amazing fact that all over the world on this day, millions of Christians, black, white, yellow, brown, the incredibly rich and the desperately poor, some with minds as brilliant as diamonds, others unable even to read a letter, some who came perfunctorily, not even sure what day it is, others so devoted that their faith sits at the center of life and controls everything they do. Think of all these people affirming on this day the unity of those who wear the name of Christ. I was a little surprised at the particular church that popped into my mind when I began to think about this morning and how so many total strangers will be joined around a table. It has sometimes been a plain little church from my childhood, with the varnished pews and the oak board up front and the hymn numbers posted on it. And once it was the great cathedral at York in northern England. But today, I suppose because I was there so recently, what came into my mind's eye was a tiny chapel halfway down one of the Alps between Saas-Fee and Saas-Grund, where 7 hours ago this morning, a little handful of German-speaking Swiss believers, just a handful, and maybe a couple of tourists, took communion. They did it in front of an altar that struck me as unbelievably garish. I have a picture of it. If you wonder what I mean by unbelievably garish, little gilded cherubs blowing trumpets, grown-up angels spreading huge wings, golden leaves curling everywhere, lots of heavy, deep blue and bright reds, and a queen in the middle behind the cross, Mary, I suppose, Queen of Heaven. Nothing even remotely like the simplicity of this room, which I like so much, but a place built, after all, in honor of the same person who inspired this place. I passed that way only once when the chapel was empty, and I cannot imagine being lucky enough to go back. I never met any of these parishioners. Their religion is strikingly different from mine. We cannot understand one another's language very well. But 7 hours ago this morning, they communed with Christ. And in all likelihood, somebody there thought of a friend or a relative in America who would be doing the same thing a little later in the day. And why this particular ceremony? Because it so quickly became part of the early Christian church. Paul, writing to the Greek port city of Corinth, spoke of the tradition that the Lord Jesus, on the night of his arrest, took bread and, after giving thanks to God, broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this as a memorial." Now, actually, his body sat right there in front of them in a chair. The loaf he held up in his hands was clearly not his real body, and everybody sitting there understood that. They were not university graduates, but this was easy enough because in Hebrew thought, the body was not simply the physical part of a person anyway, but a word for the whole person. They understood that as they ate the bread, they were establishing the closest possible relationship with their host at the table, a bond sealed in a common meal. Now, he went on to do something else. He held up a cup of wine after supper and said it was the new agreement among them, sealed by his blood. "Whenever you drink it," he said, "do it as a memorial of me." So what did he mean? Well, he meant the simplest of things, I think, before the theologians got hold of it and spent thousands of hours analyzing it in every generation since. It meant, I think, something like this: "I will be gone soon. I'd like to be remembered. So I'm making it easy for you because I'm using the elements of the most ordinary meal, bread and wine, and telling you that by an act of imagination, you can invest these simple things with special meaning. that you can pause for a moment in your day, give thanks for these common things, and remember how we were here together, and remember the dream I had for the world. Scholarship claims that the church probably did this every single evening for a while, until it became more convenient to do it once a week on the Lord's Day, a time for jogging the memory, remembering in one of all the ways we have of remembering the things that are important to us. If you heard the scripture a little while ago, you were reminded of that curious moment when Moses said that God wanted the Israelites to store up some manna and keep it as a memorial of the way they had survived in the desert. 2 quarts of it in the little wooden ark, and not a word about how it was to be kept from spoiling for generations, because the writer had no interest in such mundane matters. That ark, that little box, was a tiny traveling museum. And every home, every institution has museums like that to preserve the remembrance of things past. The bronzed baby shoes, the picture on the wall. A New England Congregational Church keeps one of the original warming pans for the cold feet of the unheated congregation, along with the hourglass that ran for 45 minutes and sometimes had to be turned twice during the sermon. Count your blessings. Simple ways of remembering that make little sense except to the people who want to remember. I think of the man I met last summer, much traveled, sophisticated, talking easily about all the countries he had visited and the ones he liked best and why, his favorite foods and wines, and then fumbling in his pocket for a pencil to write down an address, and bringing up by accident in the handful of stuff a little rose-colored pebble. He saw me see it, and he smiled. My little boy picked that up on a walk we took one day and gave it to me and said, "Dad, this is because I love you. I have carried it around the world ever since." I had never seen the man before. We'll never see him again. But we were one in that moment in understanding how a simple act of remembering can unite people. As you and I and millions of others are meant to be united by what happens next. If your imagination is alive, a simple, symbolic meal becomes Holy Communion. We invite all who wish to partake to join us now at the table.